A lot of important news, some special guests. You don't want to miss today's Line of Fire.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, a blessed and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Yes, it was yesterday. So a blessed, happy Father's Day to you. To those who are hurting, separated from your kids, separated from your families, may God's grace work. May there be restoration. And for those who are alienated from the most important Father of all, the Heavenly Father, may this be the season in your life of getting right with Him. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I've got two special guests with me. One is going to weigh in on what's happening in the Middle East, America, Iran. Is Iran, in fact, guilty of torpedoing a tanker? One of ours, what's going to happen with that? And then Ann Polk, at the bottom of the hour, will be talking about being ex-gay, coming out of homosexual practice. So we got a wide range of topics to cover today. I may get to some calls, 866-34-TRUTH, but just want to alert you, about 90 minutes from now, I'll be doing a chat on YouTube. So if you go to our YouTube channel, that's ASKDR Brown, Ask Dr. Brown, or if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook right now, it will be on our YouTube channel about 90 minutes from now. I'll be doing an exclusive chat answering your questions. So even if you're unable to call, you can post your questions, and I'll be doing that for about an hour, starting roughly 90 minutes from now, a little bit under that. All right. some important news, breaking news today regarding Sweet Cakes by Melissa. And I want to give you the background here in terms of this court case. And the Supreme Court has sent it back to a lower court, but with a directive. So here's the background. A few years ago, a lesbian woman with her mother walked into Sweet Cakes by Melissa, owned by Aaron and Melissa Klein. At that point, they were juggling job duties while caring for infant children. And this woman went in with her mother, and she had really liked Sweet Cakes by Melissa, which she found out about them earlier and all of this. So she comes in, and she wants a wedding cake for her and her lesbian partner. All right. Now, reading up on the case, it seems that this was a very emotional moment for this woman and her partner, and they wanted to bring some type of solidity for their foster children and say, okay, we are truly married and so on. The mother, Catholic, used to oppose the idea of gay marriage, but was now accepting because of having two gay children. So go in there, talk to Aaron Klein about everything. Okay, great, great. And then, all right, I need the names for the wedding cake, and gives the two women's names. And so I'm sorry, I can't do that. I'm a Christian. Now, remember, he wasn't refusing to do business with this woman. He wasn't refusing to serve her. He wasn't refusing to sell her stuff. He was simply saying, when it comes to making a cake, which for bakers like this, this is a major artistic endeavor. This is something that's it's expensive. It's a big thing that they do. Obviously, it's a big part of their business as well. So he politely declined based on his religious convictions. And again, this is a major issue. Can someone coerce you into doing something creatively that violates your convictions? So could a Christian go into, say, a company, T-shirt company? They do all kinds of graphics and things like that, and mass produce or single, whatever you need, and so on. You go in there, it happens to be owned by a gay couple. You don't know that, two gay guys. And you go in there and say, hey, there's a gay pride event taking place in our church, is going to be walking through sharing the gospel. And we want like a graphic of two men holding hands, like an X over it. And then a scripture about marriage, you know, from Genesis 2:24 about marriage being a man and woman and so on. And they said, no, we're gay. We don't want to do that. Should they be forced to do it by the law? Should they be penalized to do it? Is that right or fair to them? Obviously not. You say, well, then don't give me your business. That's your prerogative. That's your prerogative. Anyway, that's what happened here. The woman burst into tears. She's upset now. She's embarrassed her mother. So she's in the car crying. The mother goes back in there. Aaron Kine explains scripturally from Leviticus why he believes homosexual practice is wrong. It's wrong for a man to lie with a man as with a woman, which to him obviously tells him all homosexual practice is wrong. The mother says, I used to feel that way, but I don't anymore. And then Aaron Kine explains his views. This is where we stand. The mother goes back, talks to the daughter. The daughter is terribly upset. She gets home, tells her partner. The partner's terribly upset. They end up going to court over this. The courts end up forcing the Kleins to pay a $135,000 fine, emotional trauma, etc. If you read the list of everything that these women said that they suffered because of this, one in particular, and unable to function normally, you realize, okay, there are a lot of other emotional issues going on here. In other words, for this one thing to trigger that amount of emotional trauma, I'm not saying she lied about it, God knows, but for it to trigger that amount of emotional trauma, there are obviously other issues going on. It's just like if you pat me on the shoulder and I scream, okay, you didn't pat me that hard. It must have been I just had shoulder surgery. There's something else going on there. I'm terribly sunburned, something. So in any case, the Kleins appealed. They ultimately had to shut down their business entirely. All right. They appealed. No. So, and I met them some years ago at a conference. Sweet, godly folks, serious about the Lord and not going around complaining as victims because Jesus is their Lord. Just speaking up for what's right and speaking up for others. So this has now gone to the Supreme Court. And there are thousands of cases that are appealed to the Supreme Court every year. 7,000 or 8,000, something like that. And what, somewhere in the hundreds, actually less than 150 actually get heard by the court. And then some will have a certain ruling. So here's what happened. The Liberty Counsel reports on this. This was Kelly Shackelford's organization handling this, but Liberty Counsel's reported on this. SCOTUS reverses Oregon's decision to punish bakers. In a victory for Sweet Cakes Bakery and Melissa and Aaron Kline today, the U.S. Supreme Court sent the case back to the Oregon Court of Appeals in light of the June 2018 decision in the Masterpiece Cake Shop. Sweet Cakes by Melissa versus Oregon Bureau of Labor Industries involves bakers Melissa and Aaron Kline, who paid $135,000 judgment, etc. We'll scroll down. The Supreme Court's brief order directs the Oregon Court of Appeals to consider its 2018 ruling in Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission. Last year, the Supreme Court ruled that government decision makers must not be hostile to religion when deciding free exercise of religion claims. The court ruled that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission violated the neutrality required by the First Amendment by making disparaging comments against Jack Phillips' religious beliefs regarding same-sex marriage. In the case of the Kleins, similar negative comments were also made about their Christian faith. Today, the Supreme Court granted the Kleins' petition, vacated the judgment, and sent the case back to the Court of Appeals, directing that the judges apply the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision. The petition was filed by former ambassador to the European Union, C. Borden Gray, etc. Liberty Counsel's founder and chairman, Max Staver, said this is a great victory for the Kleins and for religious freedom. It seems clear that the Supreme Court has all but directed the Court of Oregon Appeals to dismiss the charge against Aaron and Melissa Kline by applying the Masterpiece Cake Shop opinion. The broader message is the government cannot be hostile toward Christian faith and values. Okay, so here's what has happened. Here's what has not happened. What has not happened is that the court has not ruled definitively. When you have a conflict between religious rights and, quote, gay rights, I say, quote, gay rights, because there's ambiguity in terms of exactly all that that would mean and entail and what is protected by the Constitution and what is not. But what is broadly referred to as gay rights or LGBT rights, where there is a conflict between religious rights and LGBT rights, what happens? Consistently, for some years now, any state that's had a law against discrimination based on sexual orientation and or gender identity has fairly consistently ruled against religious rights standing in that way. And as others have pointed out, Kai Feldblum, who was in the Obama administration, served in the Trump administration in an Equal Opportunity Commission as a lesbian law professor. She had said plainly that when she looks at this and analyzes this, she could not find a case where religious rights would win over LGBT rights. That's the way things were leaning and structured. But that's a complete outrage and contrary to some of the founding principles of our country, which are built on religious rights and religious freedom. That's why people came here in the first place, to get away from oppression of the government and church oppression and so on that was dictating things on everyone so that there could be religious rights and freedoms for those who had different views. In any case, there's no question that this is a fundamental value in America, religious freedom and freedom of conscience and freedom of speech, and it's getting violated consistently by LGBT activism. So the court did not make a definitive decision and say that here's the rule. When it's X versus Y, you rule in favor of X or you rule in favor of Y. They did not do that definitively. But what they did do with Masterpiece Cakes was this. They said, look, you actually exercised animus towards the man's religion. You didn't weigh these things out as two equals. You didn't say, okay, you've got this concern here, you've got this concern here. How do we balance it out? Fair question. How do we balance it out? No, it's rather a presupposition of bigotry, a presupposition of the wrongness of the Christian position, a state hostility towards religion, which is flatly forbidden. So the court sent it back to Colorado. And by the way, they're still going after Jack Phillips. And there's a third case, they're coming after him. And now it's a transgender. Well, why don't you bake a cake for me? I mean, it's just as concerted and overt as could be. But by God's grace, Jack Phillips continues to stand for what's right. And like it or not, he has become a standard. Speak the truth in love, but don't violate your convictions. And this way, other cases are going to continue to flare around this. So the court did not make the final ruling that says, here's the guideline. Whenever this comes up, you rule this way. But they clearly pushed back against what the Oregon courts had done. They clearly pushed back against what was done against the Kleins. They vacated the order and said they'll reevaluate it based on our principles because you had animus and hostility. Now, if they still rule against the Kleins, then you could appeal based on that case itself. Well, they claimed it was just two equal situations, and so we ruled accordingly, and then that could be appealed to the Supreme Court. So there's a further ruling we're looking for. There's something more definitive that we're looking for, but this is positive. Now, one more point. There's an excellent chance that if Hillary Clinton were our president and she was the one who had appointed two justices to the Supreme Court, all right, or if she had been president, then Obama might have been able to appoint the last justice and then Hillary Clinton the one after that, all right? Either way, you'd have two liberal justices in and you could pretty well bet that this would have gone in the opposite direction because of probably animus towards religious beliefs right there on the court. So these are big cases. Hey, if we ultimately have to go underground for our faith, die for our faith, well, it's happening around the world. But if we have liberties, let's do our best to preserve them. All right, we'll be right back with special guest David Rubin. We're going to talk about the Middle East.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
We turn our focus to the Middle East. Friends, I try to be up to date on everything that I can and as expert as I can on all things that are of interest to us on the Line of Fire. But whenever we can, we bring in folks far more expert who are focused on key issues. In this case, the Middle East. David Rubin himself, victim years back of a terrorist attack, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, and author of the brand new book, Trump and the Jews. His website, David Rubin, R-U-B-I-N, DavidRubinIsrael.com. He's here to shed some light for us on what happened in Iran with the torpedoing bombing of this tanker. David, welcome back to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Michael. Good to be with you.
So, sir, can you tell us, do we have real evidence that Iran is involved in torpedoing a tanker in the Middle East? And if so, why would they risk provoking America here?
Clearly, and it's not the first time. This is a continuation of a pattern of attacks that have occurred over the past few months in the Persian Gulf, in the Gulf of Oman, in the Strait of Hormuz. And this is going to be continuing, I suspect, until it is clearly stopped, until President Trump takes the bait and attacks them.
Well, why would they want to provoke an attack from America. It may be self-evident from their viewpoint, but, you know, America, we think we've got all this power, and Iran, we could hurt their economy and everything else. So why would they want to provoke an attack?
Well, why would they want to? Because the Iranians don't do things based on common sense. They never have. They probably never will until this regime is done away with. And you have to remember, this all started in the late 1970s with the Ayatollah Khomeini and his Islamic Revolution. You remember there were some, I believe it was 54 hostages,
yep,
American hostages that were held by the Iranians. These people are Islamic fanatics, and they will stop at nothing until they achieve their main goal, which is exporting the Islamic Revolution. And I'm quoting from them. This is what their goal is. So what are we going to do about that? How are we going to stop that? What do you do when you have a bully who is tempting you over and over and over again? Basically, the response, and I believe President Trump's response, will be to eventually hit them and hit them hard. But he is not going to let them dictate the rules of the game.
Yeah. So as far as larger American interests, how does this tie in? Most of us don't. Okay, there's a tanker somewhere in the Middle East, Persian Gulf, Gulf of Hormuz, whatever it gets torpedoed. What does this have to do with America? Why should this be of concern to Americans?
Well, that's an excellent question. And we know that the American economy is not really fueled by the Persian Gulf countries anymore. It's not, we're not reliant. Meaning the United States. Sometimes my identity as a dual American Israeli citizen comes across, and yes, I do sometimes identify with the United States as an American citizen. And yes, the United States does not rely on Saudi Arabian oil anymore. The United States has become quite self-reliant when it comes to oil, partially thanks to President Trump and how he's opened up the energy industry in the United States. But the reality is that the United States is tied to the world economy, and every free country in the world, Israel and Europe and Japan, all these countries included, are tied to the world economy. And whatever happens will affect the United States ultimately economically. If the Japanese economy falls apart, if the European economies fall apart because Iran is preventing the flow of oil in the Middle East. So that's what this is all about. That's why attacks on tankers by Iran are a threat to the world economy and a threat to the United States as a result.
And the recent video evidence that's come forward with a mine being removed, could you give us details on that so folks know exactly what we know and don't know?
Well, we do know that the tankers were attacked, and we do know that one of them was a Japanese tanker, and that's kind of ironic because the Japanese prime minister was visiting Iran at the time, and then his purpose of the visit was to mediate a peaceful arrangement, or at least to lower the tensions between the United States and Iran. While Prime Minister Abe was in Iran, the Iranians attacked these two oil tankers, and one of them was a Japanese tanker. Now, how do we know that it was them? Well, for one thing, there was a mine that had not exploded, and the Iranians sent a boat of the Revolutionary Guards, the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, to retrieve that unexploded mine. And the American government had video of that, which they publicized. And it's quite clear that it is the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. So why would they be going to retrieve an unexploded mine if they didn't even know about the attack, if they didn't even know any of the details of the attack, and they were just an innocent bystander. No, obviously, they were the mastermind behind the attack.
Mm. Yeah, and again, knowing how they've exported terror throughout the world, and especially in the Middle East, it's no surprise to know they should be associated with that. You have a book that's been out a few months, just checked on Amazon, getting tremendous reviews there and selling well, Trump and the Jews. I know that just a new area is designated Ramat Trump in Israel over the weekend. So Trump Heights, a new community in Israel. But Trump and the Jews, what are you going into in the book? And how does this larger question of America and the Middle East, how does it tie in with your book, Trump and the Jews?
Well, President Trump has been a tremendous supporter of strong ties between Israel and the United States. And it really troubled me when I saw that this was his clear policy. This was the clear direction he was going, and it was obvious that he was going to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital and the Golan Heights ultimately as sovereign Israel, and I might add the very strategic Golan Heights in the north.
Yep.
And all of this was happening, and he was also making it clear that he wanted out of that Iran nuclear deal, which was disastrous for Israel, for the United States, for the free world. So these were all very good things, and we've seen many good things since then. But I said, I have to reconcile this very, very pro-Israel president, and this president that really has a heart for the Jewish people, with the fact that there are a lot of Jews in America who are very active in the Democratic Party and who are among Trump's main adversaries.
Yeah.
And I said, this doesn't make sense. And the religious Jews, the Orthodox Jews in America, are among his biggest supporters. So I said, I have to sort all this out, research it, and help people to understand it.
So what are obviously there's a lot more to get into, and maybe we can focus in on the book another time. But you live in Israel. You're an Orthodox Jew. The majority of Israeli Jews are more secular, and then you have the ultra-Orthodox population there.
Voting
breaks down along many different lines in Israel, contrary to the way it is in America. It's fascinating to compare all of those things. But Trump and the Jews, that's a big bite to take. What is some of the conclusions that you came to doing your research in terms of the liberal Jews in America, the way they vote, the Orthodox? What did you come away with as some of the major findings?
Well, one thing I found is that the trend in the American Jewish community is that the more liberal Jews are just fading away. Their Jewish roots are becoming weaker and weaker over time, and they're becoming less and less passionate about Israel and less passionate about their Jewish roots. And as a result, they're just intermarrying in droves. And it doesn't mean that they're intermarrying with pro-Israel Christians for the most part. They're just intermarrying with people who are secular and believe,
yep,
you know, don't believe in too much except abortion rights and same-sex marriage. But the Orthodox Jewish community is the fastest growing Jewish community, the fastest segment Jewish population by far. Those who identify strongly with their Jewish roots are the ones who are going to be the future of American Jewry, and they tend to identify more with the Republican Party. And so there's some very fascinating trends there. The other thing, of course, that I found is that President Trump has continued this trend of being a very, very strong president when it comes to Israel-United States ties and cooperation.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, David, we are out of time, but God willing, I want to continue the discussion, especially as we hear more about the deal of the century, Middle East peace plan, etc. Get your perspective on that and talk more with you about your book, Trump and the Jews. Thanks so much for joining us today, sir.
You're welcome.
All right. So friends, the book by David Rubin, Trump and the Jews. I haven't read it yet, but trust me, it has my interest.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire. We want to talk about something of great importance, of great interest to Americans from every background, and that is the possibility of liberty and transformation in Jesus. This past week, every night from 6 till past 10 in the evening, and then Sunday from roughly 9 to 4, I taught an intensive class at Southern Evangelical Seminary with about 10 students from master's, doctorate level. And we were looking at sexual issues in the Bible, LGBT activism and the Bible, what scriptures speak to these issues. And we went around the class and found out, why are you taking this? And just with that small group of 10, it was amazing to see how many people had, yeah, I've got a brother that's transgender. Yeah, I've got a cousin that's gay. I've got that. This is something we're all dealing with. Is there a hope for change? What should the church's position be? I'm joined now by my friend Ann Polk, known for her own story of coming out of lesbianism, mom with children now, but campaigning to help those who struggle, campaigning to bring a message of hope with an importance conference coming up just in a few days. So, Ann, welcome back to the Line of Fire. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Brown.
Let me ask you this, Ann. When you, through liberty and Jesus, found a new way of life, did you realize that your story would be denied, mocked, maligned, and that people like you would be such an oppressed minority?
No, I just thought of myself as a sinner just like everybody else, and that Jesus could actually forgive me and I could start anew. I thought that was a pretty ordinary story in a lot of ways once you encountered the living God. But it turns out, no, in fact, it's a very offensive message to this culture. And to believe that God can redeem people from homosexuality has so offended certain groups of people that have banked on the fact that they're born gay and cannot change. I mean, that's their mantra. That's their reason for living, almost. Not reason for living, per se. It's their justification for living a gay life. That when those of us who've actually experienced life change and life transformation from Jesus, it's a threat to that statement. So the fact that God can transform lives is such an affront that they actually deny that we exist. And that's not reasonable. It's completely unreasonable to be that intolerant of another group of people who've experienced.
Right. So you have someone say that goes through a trauma of recognizing they're same sex attracted, and then they come out and they tell family I'm gay, and they're living that way, and then they really come to know the Lord and come under conviction and find liberty and new life in Jesus, and that's just have to come out again and get rejected by the community that's supposed to be so embracing and tolerant. Now there are active campaigns to make it illegal for someone with same-sex attractions who is a minor to get professional help. This is in about 15 states right now. It's illegal. California recently tried to pass a bill making it illegal for people of all age to get professional help with unwanted same-sex attraction or gender identity confusion. This is an all-out war. This is to say not only that you and multiplied thousands of others like you don't exist, but they're going to do their best to make it impossible for you to exist. This is a massive issue. And could you explain what someone goes through when they're wrestling on all sides of this? Now you come to Jesus, you want to be free, you want to be whole. There's a whole culture saying, celebrate your gayness. There's a religious heresy saying, God made you this way, celebrate it. What went on inside of you to know, hey, this is not what God has. He has a better way.
Well, I'll tell you, it wasn't because I was distressed by homosexuality per se. It was because I encountered the Holy God. And all of a sudden, what he said mattered to me.
Mm.
And at that point, I wanted to live to please the one that I had encountered, that he actually really existed. This wasn't a fairy tale. It wasn't make-believe. It was God Most High actually is interested in me and wants to redeem me and loves me. And that love rids me of my sin and the consequences of my sin. Amazing. That's an amazing story of the redemption that's found in Jesus.
Go ahead.
So anyway, when I began my walk with him, I was 19 years old, and I had been pursuing the gay life. I was uncertain about it. I was excited and also nervous, and began embracing it and had no resistance whatsoever to embracing it. I went to a party school even. It was college. UC Santa Barbara was where I went, and found ready acceptance everywhere I went. And then when I actually gave my life to Christ and became a new creature in him, I began to want to live his ways. And at that point, then I found a lot of resistance. I found a lot of resistance from being made fun of in a car on the way to a rowing practice by a lesbian who had been a friend of mine, who was just really mean in the car. And there I was stuck with all these other folks being kind of humiliated. From that to, it would have been easier for a lot of people to just say, accept me as a lesbian woman as opposed to a born-again ex-lesbian. I mean, that became the challenge. But what I figured out, Dr. Brown, is that honestly, if a fish is going with the stream, it's probably dead, you know? And fish generally swim upstream. You know, they go around, but basically if you're going against the flow, there might be some life in you and a different reason for living than a lot of people expect. Nonetheless, there should be absolute and utter freedom for anyone, youth or adult, to seek the help that they would like. So, very overreaching.
And just to put this in a context, what year did you graduate from high school?
Ages ago.
Okay.
1981, I graduated from high school.
Right, 1981. So, right, so even
I'm
even
no
back.
Spring chicken.
Yeah. But the fact is that even back then. We're not talking about today. We're not talking about 5 years ago, 10 years ago. There was tremendous resistance in the years that followed.
Oh, yeah.
You saying, hey, I'm leaving this behind. And you know what's crazy? The gay activists, they want perfection or they're going to disqualify. In other words, if someone had a same-sex thought in the last 30 years, then they're not really free. As opposed to, hey, I was living a sinful lifestyle. I no longer live that. And I found liberty and wholeness and new life in Jesus. I know so many people. It's their story. And I know the whole range. I know some that miraculously, in a moment of time, went from homosexual to heterosexual. I know folks that little by little saw a decrease in same-sex attraction and a growing increase in opposite sex. I know others that just said no to same-sex attraction and are happily living a celibate life. But the common denominator is they know Jesus, they're living godly lives, and their lives are blessed and overflowing. So, and there's an important conference coming up in just a few days, June 21st and 22nd. So friends, now is the time to get there. It is the HOPE 2019 conference. It's going to feature top speakers on overcoming sexual sin. I'm looking at the list here, Alex McFarland, June Hunt, Phil Corson, others, Ann Polk, of course, involved with this. Tell us what's going to happen at this conference, where it's going to be, who should be there.
Well, it is a beautiful conference, which of course will be protested. So we're going to have some exciting people yelling things that don't all relate to who we are, calling us conversion therapists, which we are not. We never use coercion or anything like that. We appeal to individuals who want to leave their lives apart from the constraints of same-sex attraction and have unwanted same-sex attraction. In fact, that's our primary focus, is helping people who have unwanted same-sex attraction, who want to get a breakthrough, who want to experience a new plateau, a new growth period in their lives. And so that's our primary audience. Our secondary audiences are many, and they are significant as well. And that's family and friends who have a loved one who just came out as gay, and are now grappling with the grief of dealing with, how do I relate to my child? How do I show them love without approving of their lifestyle? And that's the primary question. And it's a delicate answer. There's a whole bunch of different ways to display affection and love without giving way to approval. So that's the secondary, pastors and counselors as well. So those who are coming alongside or want to support those who are struggling, it's also a conference for them. You're absolutely right. We're having Alex McFarland, June Hunt, Julie Slattery, who's on the board at Moody Bible, and also a doctor in psychology, and Phil Corson. So we have a variety of different perspectives, and there's a beautiful time on Friday night, in particular after Dr. Slattery's presentation, where we're going to do a response of prayer time. It's a profound time every single year. And then Saturday is filled with a whole bunch of other things as well. Joe Dallas will be there speaking and ministering to parents as well.
Wow.
And so lots of great things happening. It's always profound. God shows up, and people's lives are different as a result of it.
And you know what's remarkable is I've participated in conferences like these as a friend and an ally. You talk about people that have been beaten down, rejected, cast out, and yet full of hope, full of joy, full of life. It's so important for the church to be standing together here. Pastors in the Minneapolis area, Christians in the area, get out to this conference. It's so important to be equipped. Even if this doesn't pertain to you personally, there are others that you're going to meet, minister to, family members, friends. So again, it's this weekend, June 21st and 22nd. Where do people go to find out about this?
The very best place is the website. If they can go to restoredhopenetwork.org, and that's, again, restoredhopenetwork.org. And then if you go up to the top of the page, it has a place that says events, and just hover on the word events and choose Hope Conference. So it's a great place that'll have all the information. We are accepting walk-up registrations. So we'd love to have you join us, and it would be our privilege. So to see lives transformed and all sorts of different testimonies will be shared. Beautiful. It's a beautiful time, and I'm so grateful, Dr. Brown, that you joined us and ministered to individuals as well. I know many are grateful. I'm sorry I missed your talk. I wish I would have been
no,
there.
it's my privilege and honor, and I know we're joined together in these things. Friends, listen, here's what you can do. You know, folks, you've got friends in the greater Minnesota area, greater Minneapolis area. Let them know about this. Send them to restoredhopenetwork.com. And that's also the place to go. If you want to find out about, okay, I'm dealing with unwanted same-sex attraction or struggling with different questions, and I'm not exactly, .org. Yeah, I'm struggling. I'm looking for hope or help. I've got a family member. I don't know how to help them. Restored, with a D, restoredhopenetwork.org. All right, Ann, have an awesome conference this weekend. May the Lord be with you.
Thank you.
All right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I don't say this to mock. I don't say this to be disparaging. I don't say this to be insulting. I say this to be constructive. I say this to help push us towards reality. Yesterday was Father's Day. What happens when your father, your biological father, the one who literally fathered you, what happens when that person now identifies as a woman? What happens when that person has, quote, transitioned, changed their name, maybe even had sex change surgery? What happens? How do you relate to that person? Yes, this is a highly sensitive issue in many homes across America today, both for mothers and fathers, for children of their mothers and fathers who have, quote, transitioned. How do they relate? For some, it's no problem whatsoever. Whatever, just embrace you for who you are. Others, wait a second, you've been my dad your whole life now. Or are you my mom? How do we relate? These are real issues. So I saw this reported yesterday. Kendall Jenner, part of the larger Kardashian clan, however that works out. Kendall Jenner, one of 10 children fathered by Bruce Jenner, sent him special greetings on Father's Day. Here's a headline. Kendall Jenner post sweet tribute to her amazing dad, Caitlyn Jenner, as she shares throwback family snaps. So let's get this right. Kendall Jenner, physical daughter of Bruce Jenner, one of 10 children that he fathered as a male, as a father, as a dad. Kendall Jenner thanks him, your amazing dad, on Father's Day. But this is now Caitlyn Jenner. The headline doesn't say Bruce Jenner. It says dad, Caitlyn Jenner. Friends, this underscores the fact that you cannot tamper with reality. With all respect to those who struggle, and with all respect to those in a totally separate class, namely intersex, where there is biological or chromosomal ambiguity as opposed to whether the person is male or female. We're not talking about intersex. We're talking about someone who is a biological chromosomal male or female who then identifies as the opposite of that. With all respect to whatever struggles they've been through, with all respect to whatever pain they've lived through, with all respect to whatever it has cost them to transition, I don't say this to mock or demean. I say this to say Bruce Caitlyn Jenner remains a father, remains a dad, remains a biological male, remains someone whose DNA and genetics are male, no matter what hormones he's on. Now, here's what's so fascinating. If I talk like this on Twitter, I would be guilty of misgendering, and I could get banned from Twitter for referring to Bruce Jenner as Bruce. But is it misgendering if Kendall Jenner refers to Caitlyn Jenner as her dad? I mean, can you see the dilemma here? In Canada, it is across the country. It is a crime to intentionally misgender someone. In New York City, you could be fined up to $250,000 in the workplace. If Joseph comes in and says, "Oh, now, Jane," you can't question him. You can't ask for documentation from a psychologist or anything like that. No, if Joseph comes in and says, "I'm now Jane," you have to refer to him as her. You have to let him use the ladies' bathroom. And if you don't, you could be fined up to $250,000. There's a current case in Canada where a father did not want his 14-year-old daughter to transition to male. The court has blocked him from stopping his own daughter from getting hormone treatments to start to transition her over to male, and he will be instantly arrested if he refers to his daughter by her name or refers to her as she or as his daughter. Well, Kendall Jenner just referred to Caitlyn Jenner as her dad. That's because he is the dad. And he's going to remain the dad because you can't change that. And yet you could go back and change your birth certificate that says you're now female. Yeah, you can actually do that. You can change your birth certificate. There was a case in Canada. I believe the child was about 12 years old and was having a birth certificate changed. Think of that. You're now going back in time, going back in history and trying to undo what's been done. And so you're actually born a certain way. If Bruce Jenner was born, Caitlyn Jenner was a female, then Bruce Jenner would not have fathered 10 children and Bruce Jenner would not be Kendall Jenner's dad. Friends, it's often been said that biology is not bigotry. It's not. We're just talking truth and facts, friends. And when a male competes against females, he has a biological advantage because he's a biological male. These are just realities. This is not bigotry. This is not hatred. This is not transphobia. In fact, because I've focused on these issues over the years and listened to people and tell their stories, and read their stories, I understand this is tremendously painful. I tell you, honestly, I cannot possibly relate to what someone goes through. Bruce Jenner, what he's lived through, what he's gone through, I can't identify with it. Nonetheless, my compassion does not move me away from truth. Jesus came in the spirit of grace and truth, embodying grace and truth. Grace and truth, compassion and truth, love and truth go hand in hand. It's love for me to say, Kendall Jenner, you did the right thing in honoring your dad on Father's Day rather than transferring honor for your dad to Mother's Day because he now identifies as she. He remains your dad. He remains a he. He remains a father. if God would speak to him, God would speak to him as a male, as a father, and we do him a disservice when we identify him as a woman and now celebrate his womanhood, because he will never be a woman and he will never be a mother. These are facts. Biology is not bigotry. I was thinking about DNA. Let it stand for do not alter. Come on, friends. Reality. All right. Wanted to share that with you, get that off my heart, and speak the truth. You said, well, what do we do about people who struggle? Well, here, let's back it up and ask this question, all right? What do we do with someone who's schizophrenic? What do we do with someone who's diagnosed with, quote, multiple personality disorder? And I say, quote, multiple personality disorder, because I've had other psychologists tell me it's completely bogus. Don't even think of that as a reality. But to that person's perception, it's quite real. I remember sitting with a university professor once and his wife. Nancy and I were having dinner with him and his wife. And at one point, she said something that seemed out of character. And I'll make up names. He said, let's say her name was Audrey. And he said to her, was that Sarah? Yes, that was Sarah. Uh-huh. And then they went on talking. And then something else comes out later. Was that Antoinette? Yeah. Multiple personality disorder. And they said, yeah, we're both Christians, but she suffers with this, and it's a diagnosed condition. And now he's, and I said, well, how do you deal with this as a Christian? And he said, well, I'm trying to lead each of the different personalities to Jesus. Whoa. With all respect, got to be a better way than that. If someone's schizophrenic, do we say, okay, one day you're Jim, nice Jim, and the next day you're angry Jim, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of thing? Or do we say, well, let's try to get to the root of that problem and help you? It's the same here. Just because we don't have a handy, easy solution in all cases doesn't mean that we collaborate with societal madness. Look, use the example again. There are people who suffer with what's called BIID, Body Identity Integrity Disorder. Now they are referred to as trans-abled, all right? Not transgender, but trans-abled. So their brain map, their mind map tells them that they shouldn't have a right arm, that they shouldn't have a left leg. And they are tormented by the presence of that. It would be, I imagine, like if you had a head growing out of your shoulder, it would seem monstrous. And they finally have peace when they're able to get the thing amputated. Like one guy in England, he froze his foot, you know, packed it in dry ice, froze his foot, and their doctors were able to save it. He froze it again. They had to amputate it. He has been so happy. He said, best thing he ever did. And there have been people literally laid down by train tracks, the train's coming by, to have the train sever their leg. I saw on Jerry Springer years ago, I saw the video. I didn't see the show, but I saw the video where here's a guy, clearly a male, dressed as a female with a wig, or he's grown his hair up, but probably a wig and wearing a dress, but he's got no legs from the knees down. He's a man who identifies as a woman, but he's also suffering from body identity integrity disorder. So with a chainsaw, he was able to amputate both of his legs. Yeah. And they had on the show his ex-wife and his daughter. And the people in the audience, they were like, how can you be so crazy to cut your legs off? Yeah, it's fine if you think you're a woman. That's no big deal. But to cut your legs off, how could you do that? But his wife was furious with him, screaming and yelling, you destroyed my life. I don't care you cut your legs. That's just stupid. You destroyed my life. Saying you're a woman, you destroyed my life. And the daughter's railing on him. I ended up on drugs because of you. I ended up depressed because of you. I ended up almost suicidal because of you, because I knew you were my dad, but you wouldn't act like my dad. And what about cutting off? It's like, that's just stupid. But what affected them was the transgender issue. I look at it, I think, oh, this guy needs serious help. Serious help. But why is it fine to him to identify as a woman and modify what's between his legs through radical surgery, but it's not fine for him to have his legs amputated because that gives him peace? Why was a doctor in Scotland arrested for amputating limbs of healthy patients, but would be commended for performing sex change surgery? Friends, these people need our help. There's a better way to help them. We're done.
the world.